Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity in the highway to the north, this is Safety Wars for Wednesday, April 17th. Where have I been? A lot of stuff going on. I recorded a program yesterday. I wasn't very happy. So I did not release it. Audio issues. I was in the field. No microphones, that sort of thing. A lot of background noise. You would not have been happy with it. So just a reminder. If you are at a child's game, sporting event, right? Always make sure that you have ice. My son had a little incident last night at his Little League game. It was not a nice night. He had gotten hit in the face with a pitch. It happens. It's baseball. Right? So I needed to deal with that, and I couldn't be on the air last night. Now, we woke up on the National Instant, the National News, and as usual, Rockland County, where I live, Rockland County, New York, often makes the news. We got stuff going on here like you wouldn't believe. Well, this morning there was a synagogue fire. Let me pull up the story here. All right. So this is from COL Live. I believe it's a Jewish news website. Right. Following a fire which ripped through the Chasidim 110 Shabbat Shul in Pomona, New York on Wednesday morning, congregants were devastated to discover that all three of the shul's Sifrei Torah had been destroyed. Congregants, with the assistance of Shevarim volunteers, were finally given access to the shul located at 34 North Ridge Road. A few hours after the fire tore through the shul, destroying the entire building, they discovered that the Torahs, which had been stored in a metal safe, were tragically unable to withstand the fire. They have pictures on the website here. Neighbors captured the flames on video a little bit before 6 a.m. Well, I went there before I got home tonight. Let's see if this will cooperate and everything else. So we're going to be moving to a new OBS in the very near future here. So a lot of these problems are going to go away. And let's see here. Here I am. All right. And I can hide from myself. Hi, this is Jim Polzel from Safety Wars. We're here at the site of the synagogue explosion here in Pomona, New York, right by our studios in Clarkstown. As the demolition crew has already started demolishing the place, apparently, but that's what it is, a total destruction. We even have the spiral staircase still there. Incredible. Apparently, nobody was hurt here from news reports, but I gotta verify that. But anyway, this is what we have here. Still some smoldering areas here. And incredible with all this stuff. Hopefully there's going to be a complete investigation, and we'll figure out what happened here. For Safety Wars, this is Jim Polzel. Yeah, so I'm going to be putting that up on the socials right after the show or first thing in the morning. Reportedly, there was some construction going on the site. And then at about 6 a.m. this morning, as we had, there was a fire. There were some unconfirmed reports. I mean, they had these reports during the day that there was a propane cylinder blew up or something like that. I don't know. That's where some of the reports were. We're not able to substantiate that, but I'm sure we're going to get a complete investigation because there's been a lot of anti-Semitic attacks in our neighborhood in Rockland County over since October 7th, especially in the last couple of weeks. So hopefully we're going to get down to the bottom of this. Hopefully it was just an accident with this. However, I do understand the emotional impact of losing a house of worship along with everything else, along with all the other religious icons and scrolls and everything else that go into this. And my heart goes out to the people, but thank God nobody has gotten hurt, according to news reports. Now, what often happens, and it's been a controversy in Rockland County going back for a long time, is that a lot of the houses of worship are set up in homes. And you could go and you could Google all the reports. That is a problem with that. The Hasidic community, as I understand it, I've read articles over the years, had fought in court. And it was one or two individuals that fought this without even an attorney in court to try to get keep house or home churches legal. I realize they're synagogue, home, houses of worship, whatever we're going to call them. And, it's a very interesting debate here because all the people feel that the places are not zoned for their use, and there's been some documented problems over the years. But most of the time, there are no problems, like a lot of safety things. So something you got to keep in mind here. We're going to go to commercial break, and we're going to give you folks an update. And, I should have had the safety words exclusive, because we were there with checking this out here. So we're going to go to a commercial break.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozell with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Okay, we are going to go. Hold on. I don't know. This is one of the reasons why we're changing service here. We're doing a major computer upgrade here. For the show, so we can serve you better. And what you're seeing in the background is going to change also here. But anyway, the Francis Scott Key Bridge, the disaster. We're going to do an update here, and we're probably going to do an update sometime in the near future on the East Palestine, Ohio situation here. So this is, I'm sharing this screen. This is a government website, so it's non-copyrighted. So I don't want to hear, he's using copyrighted stuff without permission. No, this is a government website, Keybridge Response 2024. And what are, here we have the progress graphic, right, for the removal. And the repair of, well, not really going to repair the bridge. I don't see how that's going to be possible. But you never know. So here we have the response progress graphic. And this is what it is. Above water removal, it's in the progress on the left-hand side of this graph. And everything's in the progress in process being removed. So we're going to go over to update 13 Unified Command. This is the latest press release on this from this website. And Monday, April 15th, Unified Command recovered the body of another missing victim at the Keybridge incident site on April 14, 2024. At the request of the family, we are not disclosing the victim's name at this time. I believe it has been disclosed. Since this press release, the victim was transported to the office of chief medical examiner and was positively identified on April 15th. The Unified Command salvage teams located what they believed to be one of the missing construction vehicles and promptly notified the state police and the FBI and Maryland Transportation Authority. And the person was trapped inside the vehicle. Investigators from the police, along with others, and the government's office met and notified members on Monday. As we mourn the lives and lost and continue to recover the recovery operation, we recognize each missing individual as someone's beloved friend or family member, said Colonel Roland L. Butler Jr., superintendent of Maryland's Department of State Police, along with all of our allied law enforcement partners who pledge to exhaust the physical and technical aspects of their training while deploying every available resource. So they've started to remove the bridge. There is a shallow channel that is open for very small boats. All right. With this, let's see. We have a multimedia situation here. I'm going to see if we could get this to play. Hold on. That's what we're looking at here. So they're removing parts of the bridge. Looks like they're dredging the bottom here. There is a crew boat here. There's another crew boat or inspection craft in the middle of the screen. So they're moving right along here. These are all, this appears to be a Don John dredge, Don John, or here, but or Cashman. I'm just going off of the colors there. Not sure exactly who they are. And the cargo ship is still there. And this was filmed the last Thursday. And, ooh, what's this? Power lines, maximum vessel height and overhead wire, 135 feet. So this looks like it is the barge had passed these by here. If you look at the big graphic. Here's another view here. And that's Don John. I was correct. The company. There's a clamshell bucket. Looks like they're removing just debris and steel. And here we have our last one. I sure would love them to have a narration here, but they don't have it. And this is another part of the bridge. It looks like they have a shearing device on a track hoe with that. I could be wrong. That's not a very good video. And I know this is boring on Safety FM. This is we're just going over pieces of the bridge and some of the work that they've released. Right now, they're circling around the survey boat is circling around the dredges and the other equipment. So here's the question. So that is a clamshell. Not a clamshell, but sometimes it's called that. Gripping piece is a steel, and it looks like the other thing is a shear. Let's see what that is, the other end of that. Okay, the other end. Yeah, it is a shear on the second piece of machinery here on the right, my right of the screen. I believe it's your left. I tell you what, these are great training videos if you are in this line of work. I mean, this is a gift that we have this stuff here. And all this is some of the debris that they're pulling up. I mean, this is a long and slow process. I don't know if they have divers. They likely don't have divers in the water here when they're doing this, at least around these barges. There is another survey craft that looks like a U.S. Navy survey boat. It's like a 50-footer. That's a clamshell bucket on a crane from Cashman Dredging. So it looks like they have at least 7 or 8 craft there, along with survey vessels here. And as you can see at the time of the video, the cargo ship is still there, stuck. And see, here we have some more pictures. And oh, that's a nice picture here. And again, all of this stuff is for free. I mean, if you're in this line of work, probably a good thing to place to go to these websites here. You get pictures and you get text. Now, let's see. That's all I wanted to say on that. Just a little update, and we're going to have updates throughout this tragedy here. And we're going to be praying for the families here. Now, some other reports that have come out in the last couple of days is the ship that caused the bridge collapse had apparent electrical issues while still docked. The FBI has opened up an investigation on this. Again, 6 people dead. You have all this stuff, right, where they're going on. It's reasonable that the FBI is investigating. I wouldn't say whether it was, no, they're conducting a criminal investigation, but there may not be any criminality here. We don't know. I don't think anybody intended for this to happen. We'll talk about the Hannah Gutierrez Reed situation here in a minute, because there's a lot going on with that. So, owner of ship in Baltimore bridge collapse asks cargo owner self-cover the salvage costs. The owner of the massive container ship Dolly, which caused the deadly collapse of the bridge, has initiated a process requiring owners of the cargo on board to cover some of the salvage costs. The ship's owner made what's known in maritime law as a general average declaration, which allows a third-party adjuster to determine what each stakeholder should contribute, according to the company's spokesperson, Darrell Wilson. The requirement is often invoked after maritime accidents, so the cost of saving a vessel or its cargo is shared among all parties. I mean, maritime law, I'm not even going to pretend I understand everything, but according to this article from the AP that I'm reading off of, it's goes back for centuries, this stuff. Now, other maritime situations. This Monday was the anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic on April 15, 1912. Now, some facts with the Titanic right here with this. Hold on. All right. So I know there's all different sources out there for everything that happened here. All different types of statistics here. Okay. All right. So hold on. I'm going through this. All right. So, All right. So this was a gruesome, you know, if you could see the movie, I mean, this was a gruesome type of event here. So basically there's a lot of stuff going on with this, a lot of theories, and now they have a conspiracy theory that the Olympic and the Titanic were switched, and this was not the Titanic that sunk, that was the Olympic sunk, and this goes on and on and on and on. So I had all the statistics here for this. So about 1,500 people were killed. There were not enough lifeboats. They had the required amount of lifeboats, but they weren't enough, and things had gotten updated. It took many years to update all of the things here for the Titanic. So after the Titanic disaster, recommendations were made in part that ships should carry enough lifeboats, mandated lifeboat drills. So if you've ever been on a cruise, what do they got? Lifeboat drill there. And of course, people are always making a joke over it. Oh, yeah, you know, blah, blah, blah. I got to do this. Well, nothing's ever going to happen. Well, guess what? You have these drills because it makes the accident more survivable. Following all this stuff, the U.S. government passed the Radio Act in 1912. This act, along with the International Convention for the Safety of Life at Sea, stated that radio communications on passenger ships would be operated 24 hours a day, along with a backup power supply, so not to miss distress calls. Also, the Radio Act of 1912 required ships to maintain contact with vessels in their vicinity, as well as coastal onshore radio stations. I know that's been updated over years. What some other stuff is that as rockets from a ship or a boat always indicate a distress signal, because apparently there were rockets being shot off and some other stuff, and there was a nearby ship, freighter SS Californian, that said, hey, you know, it's a Titanic, it's this, it's that, they're celebrating, blah, blah, blah. Again, International Ice Patrol. After the Titanic disaster, the U.S. Navy assigned scout cruisers Stresser and USS Birmingham to patrol the Grand Banks, the remainder of 2012. The Revenue Cutter Service, the forerunner of the U.S. Coast Guard, assumed responsibility in assigning the cutters Seneca and Miami to conduct the patrol for that. And there were other stuff going on, and there were ship design changes for this. For example, the double bottoms of many existing ships, including the RMS Olympic, were extended up the sides of their hulls, their water lines to give them double hulls, and height of the bulkheads inside the ship. So there were good things. And again, there are some sources that had things that went on even up to the late 1940s because of the Titanic disaster that had to be negotiated for decades from this stuff. And I'm sure World War II had something to do with it. Now, with updating things, because ship design during World War II, ship design after World War II is, was radical there, from my understanding. Now, we're going to talk about the Hey, Nick and Taurus Reed, let's take another break here.
In a world where danger lurks in every corner, one man stands as a beacon of hope. Jim Polzel, a veteran safety expert with over 3 decades of experience, now bringing his knowledge to you with Safety Wars. Engaging, informative, and always relevant, that's Safety Wars. Join the safety revolution with Safety Wars, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos.
So, there's a lot going on
here. OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Polzel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy!
Now, there's a lot of information, a lot of people out there, you know, they're talking about the Hanukkah Terrace Reed situation. And basically, that was the armor and the rust reductions case. We've been following this case almost from the beginning. We started following it after the New Mexico OSHA had issued their report. Because I tell you what, all that they had was meaning the news media. Well, there was a shooting on the rust set, and what does this mean for Alec Baldwin? And blah, blah, blah. This went on for years, but it was actually months. Then the report came out, and we reviewed the report on this program. You can go and look up those programs. One of the things that got us on Coast to Coast AM was those series of programs on this whole shooting. Now, I have a lot to say here with this, and if I don't get to the OSHA news today, that's fine. Because I tell you what, the armorer had 18 months in prison from, and this, believe it, 2021 shooting. I always say it's 2022, it's 2021. The Russell armorer was found guilty of involuntary manslaughter. All right. The judge was not nice. This is what the judge said, Judge Mary Marlowe Summer, quote, "I find what you did constitutes a serious violent offense, and the defendant, who is now 27, raised a request herself for the probation, and Your Honor, you know," she said, I was young, naive, I took my job as seriously as I knew how to, but I beg you, please don't give me more time. The jury has found me in part at fault for this horrible tragedy, but that doesn't make me a monster. That makes me a human." All right. And let's remember, let me put this in, right? This is Safety Wars, broadcasting to our brothers and sisters in the occupied territory of behavior-based safety. Get out your secret decoder ring. Here is your nightly message.
Human error is normal. Human error is normal.
This is safe. So, right, human error is normal. The question is this. Did this rise to the level of criminality? My opinion, the only thing that makes this criminal is that you brought live ammunition onto the set, and it migrated through the whole set. When we read the original report from OSHA, from the New Mexico OSHA, right, I don't believe they call themselves that, but we were always told, now there's a lot going on. This was the whole systems breakdown. And the person here, this Gutierrez Reed, very, very young. She is, for as far as I'm concerned, a safety professional. I think back when I was 22 or 23 years old, and I had the chance of being misogynistic here. It was rough for a 22, 23-year-old safety professional supervising or managing safety for people 10, 20, 30 years older than you, even 5 years older than you, because you're right out of school and everything else. Women historically have had it worse in the field. I still get calls from and emails, calls. We have conversations with a lot of women in the safety field. And I tell you what, they got it rougher than even today than I've ever had it, all right, with that. And I had my issues. And to put someone in this position, I suspect that played a little bit into this, just based on my own thoughts here. with this. Number one. Number two, you're dealing with people in the industry who have extremely strong personalities, to say the least. Right? I think that would be fair. So when you're hiring a safety professional and you have personalities, strong personalities, and you have big responsibilities, which these things were big responsibilities, you try to match the personality with the people you're dealing with. So if you have people with strong personalities, you want to hire someone who's able to manage strong personalities. And I've always been pretty successful with that. Now, you have the added problem here. And again, this is all hindsight bias. I get it. Monday morning quarterback. You have the other thing going on that you had a culture here, according to OSHA, not according to Jimmy Fozell. According to OSHA, you had a situation where you had multiple general duty clause violations. Or that's New Mexico OSHA. New Mexico OSHA adopted all of the federal standards, plus they have a couple of their own. There were industry standards, nothing specifically to this. So you did not have a lead standard for this. You did not have a lockout tagout standard for this, even though you could implement some of the aspects of lockout tagout into gun handling. All right. With this. So you had near misses that were not investigated. You had situations going on, lack of oversight, and her immediate boss was pleaded guilty to some stuff. Now, someone in the chain of command here wrote in writing to Miss Reed, don't worry about you. You're hired for props and you're hired for armorer duties. And they allocated a certain number of days for each. They had exceeded their budget on, should sound familiar if you're in construction, they exceeded the budget on the gun safety, on the armorer stuff. She had voiced her concerns in writing. Look, there's something bad's going to happen. We're going to have no situation here. The training, no time for it. And her boss said, in writing, okay, don't worry about it, basically. Right? I'm paraphrasing majorly here, but that's basically what it was. And then this happened with this. She was found guilty. What can we learn as safety professionals? A lot of critical things. I don't know if they would alleviate Ms. Gutierrez Reed of liability in this situation. I do know that it would likely prevent an accident, right? Handling this. So I've been forced to do this, right, over the years. Hey, Jim, we need you out here, blah, blah, blah. You go there and nobody will listen to you. Nobody will listen to what you're saying. They'll ignore you and dump all the safety responsibilities on yourself. And if you've been a longtime listener over the 320 plus programs here, you're going to know, you hear some of those stories here with this. Now, what do I do to try to mitigate liability to myself, my company, and everything else? And even on the few jobs that I'm a direct hire, it's in writing what my responsibilities are. One of them is, do I have the authority to hire, fire, or discipline anyone? That's got to be in there. Am I the confident person? Now, in this context, there is not a confident person. She is de facto the confident person here with this. So what's the OSHA definition of a confident person? Someone who's able to assess a hazard and fix them. Again, that's not a direct quote, but that's the idea. You have to be able to fix the problems, shut down work. The fact that she put out an email, not email, text messages are going back and forth, and where she could not impact the corporate policy here would indicate to me that she's not the confident person here, right? Now, this is something else we can learn. We were always told, get everything in writing and document everything, because you're going to limit or eliminate your liability. This proves that she had this stuff documented. Hey, don't do your job, or don't concentrate on that job so much. Do it on the other one. This proves, she put it in writing. This proves that when this came out, she wasn't in charge. And this did not alleviate her criminal liability in this. And her criminal liability was bringing live ammunition on there that got commingled and contaminated the blanks and things of that nature. What wasn't done, allegedly, according to the New Mexico report, as I recall, training wasn't done, safety meetings weren't done, near misses weren't done, and a whole bunch of industry standards were not followed. General duty clauses, they got fined $100,000 for this by New Mexico OSHA, and they paid the fine after it was negotiated downward. Now, if you're I've been faced with this several times. What do you do here? There's several options that I can think of off the top of my head. First option is you follow it up. Your boss says, don't worry about this. Well, does your boss have a boss? Does your boss's boss have? Now you're getting into corporate culture. What's going to happen? If they say, hey, this Miss Reed, you're a pain in the neck and you're fired, what does she have? Come on, we're going to, do I have a sound effect for that? What do you have? What do you have? What do you have? You have a whistleblower case. So under federal OSHA, New Mexico OSHA, you could have, say, look, I was fired or I was disciplined or whatever for bringing up a safety issue. Now, guess what? She gets fired. She got a whistleblower case. This is why I tell parents who have teenagers or new or recent college graduates or going to be college graduates, should send them to an OSHA outreach course. So they learn their rights in the workplace. And in the first hour, whistleblower rights are things. So she would have been covered by the Whistleblower Act. The other issue is that she could have, which I don't recommend, is I recommend they fire you, not that you quit. If things are going that bad, I've walked on projects already. Where we're, and not recently in the last 20 years, but before that I walked off projects saying, look, we're dealing with X, Y, and Z hazard. You're ignoring all of the safety protocols that have been put in place. You're ignoring the plans. You're not doing air sampling. You're not doing air monitoring. You're not doing anything. And by the way, I'm getting followed on the way home because I asked someone to put a pair of gloves on. That happened. All right. Now, you have to make a decision what you're going to do. Are you going to leave that and report it? I would not leave. Knowing what I know after all the years I've been in here, I would stay. I report them, make them fire you. Oh, they're going to blacklist you. Oh, really? I tell you what blacklists you. An 18-month jail term is what blacklists you. Know what impacts your conscience? When you have one of your coworkers died because you did not do your job, that impacts your conscience, unless you're a psychopath. Think about it for a minute. How would you handle this situation? You can give me a call, an email, jim@safetywords.com. Give me some ideas how you would handle it, but that's how I would. I would report it and follow it up. If they refuse to do what they do, be a pain in the neck. Get emails, text messages, things of that nature. She could have called OSHA herself, say, look, we're handling guns out here, blah, blah, blah. They're ignoring me with this. I don't know what her employment contract is, but this is where it comes into. I would think that it would be some type of defense to say, I don't have the authority to hire, fire, or discipline anyone on this project, and I'm not the competent person. Competent person was okay with everything going on with this. I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to do, and they were notified of the issues. I don't know with this. Again, there's focus around a live bullet coming onto the set, and there was some apparently, with this. I don't know how this is going to impact the Alec Baldwin case, but something to think about there. Let's go to our last commercial break, and we are going to...
Is your safety training old?
Talk about OSHA.
Hackney. Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that actually addresses your hazards in your workplaces and is not standardized baloney from 25 years ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call Jim Pozel at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you're receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces.
So, I'm serious about this whole thing with the training stuff here. So actually, I was talking to a new client today, specifically on this stuff. And that's one of my questions I talk about. What kind of training do you have? What's the outlet of training? What's the training relevant to what you were doing? It's very important you do that. You're not going to get, if you're going to be doing stuff online typically, or some type of learning management system, LMS system, typically things are not going to be tailor-made to what you're doing. So when you give someone like me a call, preferably you do give me a call, and we develop a program that's relevant to what you're doing out there. You set up a learning team. That we've done that already. We had whole classes for HazWhopper. What we did was we had a small presentation, and then we went on safety audit. So we had essentially a learning team. And this was for management, because management did not know what they were doing out there. Right, Brent Sutton and all the learning team people, Sam Goodman comes to mind, have a very good concept here. If you're a manager, do you know how to do this? Now, do you know how to do the work and all the other stuff? Don't leave it to chance. Or anything else, you got to know what's going on and have qualified people out there. Here is from the OSHA trade release. So OSHA is to hold a training event to improve federal worker safety and health. If your registration begins June 10th, this is going to be in 2020 South Arlington Heights Road. Participation is free of charge for federal employees. Now, I wonder if you could go there if you are a private employee. Well, it looks like new user other than federal OSHA. Anyway, we'll look into that, because if that might be a good thing to go, especially if you're a federal contractor or something like that, to do that. Here we have proper planning safeguards could have prevented a New Bedford dock collapse. It's from April 11th. A Connecticut marine and heavy construction contractor could have prevented the October 2023 collapse of a 200-foot section of pier on Heavy Ticton Avenue in New Bedford, Massachusetts, which plunged five workers into the Acushnet River and injured two workers, and by adhering to legally required safety standards. Let's see what they have. OSHA and inspectors found that the company did not determine if the pier's walking working surfaces had the structural integrity to support employees. And OSHA issued the company a willful citation and assessed $161,000. Dollars. So let's see what we have here. Total of $214,000. Scrolling on down. Citation one, item one, 1926-106. Employees working over or near water where danger of drowning exists and were not provided with life jackets. Again, they got to have life jackets. $11,524 for a couple hundred bucks in life jackets. Good cost-benefit analysis, guys. Women don't make this type of decision. Men do. Citation one, item two. Each employee on a working and a walking working surface on an unprotected side or edge, which was 6 feet or more above a lower level, was not protected by guardrail systems or anything else. So they were not protected. Again, if you're over water, you still have to have fall protection on, right? Employees were not protected against falls of water, right? When working 6 feet or higher, $9,218. And this is citation one, item three, serious, $16,131. The employer did not, and this is all under construction, did not erect or maintain control lines, warning lines, railings, or similar barriers to mark the boundaries of hazardous areas. This was specifically around the swing area of a crane, from what I understand here, based on this. Citation one, item four, serious, another $16,131. They did not have the crane secured to the barge. All right. With that, or to the pier with that, where what would have prevented struck by and crush hazards and things of that nature. $16,131. And the willful serious violation for $161,323. They did not, under 1926-501, no assessment was done of the walking and working surface. So everyone's innocent until proven guilty. This gets negotiated downward often, litigated, negotiated, vacated, the whole thing. Now, one thing I wanted to cover. Hold on here. U.S. discus throw. Hold on. I got to get the guy's name. So, big news in the discus throw this week. A new world record. A Lithuanian discus thrower, Mykolas Alkina, a Lithuanian immigrant to the United States, breaks the longest standing men's track and field world record. He threw 74.31. Which was a lot, how much? 24 centimeters further than a family friend of his, Jürgen Schultz, said in 1986 when I was competing in this event. Now, his father was a discus thrower also. Now, let me point out some other Olympic news here. Did you see these uniforms? They're not safe for work. The women's uniforms on for track and field. And I recall when I was competing, there was some controversy because they changed the women's uniforms, all the uniforms. I mean, let's face it, we ended up buying our own type of uniform because nothing ever fit right. Stuff from the school. I mean, it was horrible. Now, things were, we'll say, less modest than what they were in the 70s, a lot of this stuff. And it was very controversial and everything else, and women did a lot of complaining. Now, the new women's uniforms, and they have multiple options for uniforms. One of them, we'll just say, inappropriate. My opinion is inappropriate here, and it's not me being a prude here. With this, especially now, this has come out the last couple of Olympics especially with the female volleyball players, beach volleyball, with uniforms that are just not immodest, to say the least. Now, what does this have to do with safety? That has a lot to do with safety. Abby Ferry, she's had, I don't know if she has a group anymore. She used to have a podcast with three other people, right? The Safety Justice League. They're not doing that anymore, to my knowledge. But one of her things has always been appropriate female clothing. Because the female clothing that women have historically been given, especially PPE, were for men. So they used to treat women as small men and was inappropriate. So if you have, right, female-oriented PPE, right, with the appropriate styles and cuts and tailoring and everything else, women are more likely to use the PPE, and it's more comfortable, more likely to use it and everything else. In this case, after what we've gone through in the last 5 years with women's issues, with some stuff has come out. I know there were a lot of people in my sphere with rape allegations or sexual assault situations that we didn't know about in the 80s and 90s. No one knew about it. And we also had they were talking about men and how badly that some of us act around women and with women and misogyny and everything else out there. And for Nike to come out with this type of uniform that is very immodest and expect women to wear this and it to be featured in their press release and everything else, I have to say, what's going on here? These are athletes. They're female athletes. They're athletes. Treat them with some respect. I don't see them, these uniforms, being respectful at all. Here, I see them being very inappropriate. Okay, I'm going to be a prude, and I know I'll get mail. Oh, well, you know, Jim, blah, 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 don't you like, well, okay, great. You know, I'm married. I like women. However, something draws the line. You have to draw the line here, and I just question that. And I want everybody out there to realize it's not cool. It's not okay to have this kind of stuff going on, whether it's in the Olympics or in your workplace. Here, and again, they're female athletes. Treat them with respect. They already have a lot of they don't have the resources that a men's program have, and I do understand the Title X of the NCAA. They have to have an Equal Rights Amendment, I believe it is, and everything. They gotta have equal access to sports, blah blah blah. I understand that by law they have to do it, but that doesn't mean that it always happens. Just think about it in your own school district, in your own little league, in your own female sports organizations. The stuff that goes on, and you know. Just all again, I hate the rant, but you know, I'll give you a rant on this. It ain't right here with this. And by the way, fall protection, they do make female fall protection, just to let you know, because I've had multiple employees who are female who could not fit into the standard male unisexual fall protection. But guess what? Wasn't unisexual fall protection, right? It was clearly made for a man here and did not fit. So what does that mean? Women don't have access to PPE, do not have access to work areas. I mean, that's not cool. So hold on. I am looking for my outro video right here. And for Safety Words, we'll be back tomorrow, God willing, maybe a pre-recorded program. But we'll be back.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, J.L. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.